Welcome to Diversity Discourse, the official podcast of Minority Business Entrepreneur Magazine. This is the space where we create meaningful conversations around supplier diversity, diverse business entrepreneurship, and diversity, equity, and inclusion with some of the industry's most engaging and successful entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and experts. Now, let's get started with today's episode.
Hello, I'm Tanya Isley, the publisher of MBE Magazine, and welcome to another episode of Diversity Discourse. This year, 2024, is our 40th anniversary, and we're going to be introducing some exciting things in our content, our advertising, and our marketing. As part of our commitment to providing women and diverse business owners with the information and resources they need to grow their businesses and succeed, we're partnering with the financial and wealth building expert who'll be providing content to our print magazine, our website, here on Diversity Discourse, and in a dedicated newsletter that focuses on financial topics for diverse business owners. Allison Tate is a certified financial planner and the founder and owner of Avery Wealth Management in the Atlanta area. And she's going to be leading the charge in getting you financial content to help you do better business. And Allison is joining us today to talk about what she has planned for this year and how she helps business owners with their financial issues. Welcome, Allison, and let's get started with you telling us a bit about your background so everyone can get an idea of why you do what you do and how you came into the financial sector.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me today, Tanya. I am excited to be here. That is a very interesting question, and I'm going to take you all the way back to my childhood if I can. As a child, I learned the value of delayed gratification. Pretty early on in my life, my parents gave me a weekly allowance. And like most kids, you probably use that allowance at the ice cream truck. That's where me and my friends would gather and we would just buy whatever we wanted, using my allowance. But as I got a little bit older, I no longer wanted that ice cream and I set my sights on things that were a little bit more expensive. And I think about my first pair of roller skates. I really was into skating. My friends and I would skate around the neighborhood, and I used to borrow my friends' skates. And I asked my mom, could I have my own pair? Could she buy them for me? And she told me no, but that I could buy them myself if I save my allowance. And I'm like, okay, wait. So if I don't go to the ice cream truck and I save the money you give me each week, I'll actually have enough to buy my first pair of roller skates. And I did. And then as I got older, I set my sights on things that were more expensive, like Nintendo systems. And I know I'm aging myself, but those are all things that I first bought with my own allowance. And as I started to move throughout life and, graduate from college and started my first job in corporate America as a commercial banker, it was a time in my life where I was in my early 20s. I started to have, some of the elders in our family pass away, and I couldn't figure out why it took 2 weeks to bury a family member. And, I later learned that it took so long because our family was taking a collection and basically gathering the funds together to pay for someone's funeral. And, I thought to myself, like, there has to be a better way than this. My loved ones, my, great grandparents deserved better than this. What was really missing? And it was the fact that we didn't have life insurance. As I move forward a little bit more in my 20s, I had some friends declare bankruptcy. And they would reach out to me and just say how shameful they felt that they had to do this so early on in their life. And I just found myself kind of like counseling them through the shame and telling them that there was nothing to be ashamed about, but like, let's get on the solid, financial footing. So I would help create budgets for them and, just kind of give them encouragement along the way in their financial journey. Meanwhile, I'm still a commercial banker doing these life events are happening over to the side. And it never really occurs to me that like financial advisory is a career path until, you know, later on. And when I learned that you can actually, you know, help people achieve their financial goals, I said, okay, this is something that I'm willing to take a risk on because I really valued helping people get to their goals. And I kind of just took a leap, left that banking job, entered graduate school, found an MBA program where I could focus on personal financial planning. I did that here in Georgia and went through that program, came out, and I was like, I'm ready to be a financial advisor. I had what I consider to be hands down the best learning grounds, if you will, for financial planning. I left graduate school and my first job into financial planning was with Goldman Sachs in Atlanta, where we really worked with senior level corporate executives, helping them protect their wealth. And during that experience, I worked with a lot of high net worth individuals, and I really got to see how wealthy people manage their money. I got to see the things that they really care about, the things that they don't care about. And it was really eye-opening just how they really leverage money in a way that I had never seen before. So meanwhile, I'm like learning how to help them and service them, but I'm also like taking notes for myself at the same time. You know, I'm like, okay, so you don't get, you know, a lot of the wealthy did not have car loans. I found that to be really surprising. They would just buy their cars outright with cash. And they wouldn't get like the large, you know, fancy cars, the, you know, Mercedes, the BMWs, all the fancy European cars. They would get like your Fords and just your, or a truck. And that was their vehicle of choice. And again, very eye-opening to me at an early age to say, okay, I think I've been doing this wrong. Like, let's just kind of switch the way that I think about like how to use money and like how you should leverage debt. And, you know, they really did not use their cash to invest in depreciating assets. That was a really good lesson that I learned early on. Working with them for about 10 years, I learned and saw so much. I mean, these are the top, not even the 1%. These are like the top half of a percent of income earners in the country. And a lot of their wealth needs and wealth planning were really complex. A lot of them had complicated tax situations that we had to help them navigate, a lot of wealth transfer issues that they had to navigate. And I'm just soaking up all of this knowledge, not really knowing that this is putting me like light years ahead of other, you know, advisors in the industry. But I love the work. It was very challenging work. What ended up happening is that because I worked with so many corporate executives, a good portion of my client base ended up leaving corporate. And it was very, like, it was very scary for someone who values like security and protection to have someone say that they're leaving their seven-figure job. And I'm like, to do what? And they're like, I'm going to open this boutique. I'm going to start becoming a real estate flipper. I want to start a nonprofit. I want to start a consulting firm. And I'm like, what? You know, wait a minute. So you're willing to take on, you know, all of this, the risk. Why? And, you know, and for most of them, it was because they were no longer being fulfilled in those corporate spaces. Their goals and their values had changed. They wanted to make a bigger impact in different areas or just take a chance on themselves. And so I'm like, okay, well now like all the knowledge that I've learned about, you know, company stock and taxation in that space, I now have to transition to learn everything about becoming a business owner. Because setting up a business, like they would ask me, like, how do I set up the LLC? I'm like, I don't know. But the person I am, I'm going to help you figure it out. And that's exactly what I did. It's like, how do we set up these LLCs? How do we get our, you know, our EINs? How do we get business credit? What does my tax return look like now? Like all of these things, like I'm learning for the first time and like starting to get more confident in my ability to counsel my clients in those spaces. At the same time, it was kind of like right after the time of George Floyd's murder. And you started hearing and reading all these stories about, you know, Black women leaving corporate, starting their own business, and finding tremendous success and tremendous wealth. And I really thought to myself, well, if Black women are building wealth for the first time, they don't know how to do it. Typically, there's not a blueprint of someone we could look to in our family to say, like, how do we do this? And, you know, being that I was in this, you know, kind of Goldman Sachs, you know, wall, if you will, they wouldn't be able to come through those doors unless they had $15 million. So they were being prevented from getting access to the real information that they needed to grow and protect their wealth for the first time. And I said to myself, well, you know what? If they were courageous enough to take a risk on themselves, why can't I do the same thing? I saw my clients do it successfully. I helped them do it successfully. And I just felt like it was my turn. It was my turn to kind of leave the walls of that space that kind of kept so many of us out. And let's just try to find each other. I left so that I could find, you know, minority business owners who were really trying to secure generational wealth.
Okay. So tell us, what does A Very Wealth do best? How do you help your clients?
The one thing holding business owners back from achieving the highest level of wealth is taxes. It's kind of like what you don't know really can hurt you. And when you're at the beginning stages of your business and you're just kind of putting the pieces together and you're bootstrapping things and you're figuring out like what must you have, what can you wait on? Oftentimes we wait on the things that are most expensive, but those tend to be the things that actually can help us the most. And that would be like a bookkeeper, you know, a solid CPA, a solid tax strategist, a good financial advisor, because we simply think we can't afford them. But like as time moves on and like in the first couple of years, like maybe you're not as profitable in your business. So when you get those tax returns, there might be a loss. And so at the end, when you look at like what you might owe, you might not actually owe anything. You may be in a refund position. And you're like, oh, okay, I understand taxes as a business owner, no problem. But as you're going along and you're growing your business and you're making more revenue and you're becoming more profitable, the day will come where you get that tax bill that surprises you. It literally like comes out of nowhere and slaps you in the face. And I really hope that if that has happened, you hope you have the cash to pay the bill. I hope, right?
Well, I hope so. I really do. And speaking of taxes, it's tax season. So what advice do you have for people who are late in getting their paperwork together? Because I know many people procrastinate and wait till the last minute. But how can they plan to do things early or on time so they don't run into that issue?
Yes. Well, it's not too late because the e-filing system just opened up on Monday. So I would say now is the time that you get with your bookkeeper. If you don't have a bookkeeper and you've been, you know, just kind of keeping that spreadsheet, you know, kind of tracking expenses and income as you've gone along, now is the time where maybe you should hire that bookkeeper, you know, in the next 20 days, if you can find one that has capacity to really help update all of your books and records and bring you current. Because you need that current set of books and records so that you can properly file your return. You also want to make sure that you are working with a tax preparer who is not working with the IRS. And what I mean by that is tax season, you know, you're just going to your CPA and asking them to prepare your return. They're really just entering all the information into a computer system and spitting out a result. There's very little that they could do to change what happened last year. Also, you find that like CPAs and tax preparers tend to be just really overwhelmed with just client volume. So a lot of times they don't have the time to ask you deep dive questions to uncover hidden expenses and tax credits. You kind of gathering that data through, you know, your bookkeeper, you know, gathering all of your receipts properly, it really is your responsibility to tell the IRS your tax story. And you're telling that tax story when you prepare the return.
Okay. Now, when it comes to business owners, what are some of the major financial issues they come to you for?
I would say, again, taxes, number one, for sure. The second is, am I saving enough for retirement? If you took a risk on yourself, then basically you are now in control of your financial future. You are now responsible for whether or not you are saving enough for retirement. And we don't want to remain entrepreneurs until the very end. We want to enjoy all of our hard work. And the only way we could do that is to make sure that we are preparing properly. The other thing that business owners come to me for is just securing generational wealth. It's something that, again, has been like a buzz term over the last few years, you know, particularly like taken up by, you know, Black and Brown communities by saying they want to create generational wealth. But not many people really know what that means and what it actually entails. Because first, in order to pass money to the next generation, I have to make sure that you have enough. So we have to make sure that you have more than enough. So either you've saved enough or you have enough life insurance that can be passed on to the next generation. But then also understanding that it's not just the transfer of money to another person. You really need a proper set of estate planning documents to really effectuate generational wealth. Because if you just gave your loved ones, let's just say $5 million outright when you pass away, that money could be gone in a couple of years. So you have to make sure that you are creating an estate plan that takes care of your family after you're gone, but also leave some money aside for the next generation. That's how you create generational wealth.
Okay, so you recently wrote an article for our winter issue titled Protecting Your Small Business, Key Insurance Solutions Every Owner Should Consider. And in the article, you outlined the importance of several types of insurances for businesses such as life. But let's talk about a couple of the others that are important for small business owners.
Sure. I think one that's often overlooked is liability insurance. I would say if you are a business owner, it's not a matter of if you will be sued, but when. And you have to make sure that you have proper protection to protect your livelihood, your business, your baby, the thing that you've worked so hard for and risked so much for, the business that you've cried yourself to sleep over, that you've lost sleep over. It can all be taken away in the blink of an eye by some unfortunate event. You know, I think about someone who I know who's a business owner who works in like the med spa field. And they did a, you know, procedure on someone that did not go well. That person ended up suing them and took them out of business. You think about, you know, just one unfortunate, it could be that one unfortunate event that no one wants anything bad to ever happen. That one client that comes in, that person that comes into your restaurant and has a slip and fall, that employee that might have an accident on the job. No one wants those things to happen, but you have to have liability insurance to protect you from that. And even some business owners that are consultants or speakers who want to work with large corporations, oftentimes that corporation will require you to have a pretty large liability insurance policy before you set foot on their campus to deliver your speech and presentation. So you want to make sure that you have that excess liability insurance to not only protect your business, yourself, but also give you access to new higher ticket opportunities. So that's one that I think most businesses overlook. But it's also relatively inexpensive as well. So if you don't have excess liability insurance, definitely look into it and secure it for 2024. Another type of insurance, or I would call it an agreement, would be if you're a business owner, you have to have a buy-sell agreement. What happens to your business when you pass away? If you don't have a buy-sell agreement in place, there's no continuity for your business. That business could just kind of flow through your estate and it could end up going to your spouse, your children. Do your spouse and your children want to run your business? Are they qualified to run your business? Is there someone else better suited to do those things? Well, you need to make sure that you have an agreement that basically outlines, if something happens to me, who do I want to sell this business to? And it also allows you to establish a fair price for that person or persons to buy your business. So I would say, you know, excess liability insurance, you know, a buy-sell agreement, and kind of in tandem with a buy-sell agreement, that person may need key man insurance. And that insurance could be on, you know, a key person's life, whether that's, you know, the CEO, founder, CMO, you know, someone who's created some technology for the business. If something were to happen to them and they passed away, there needs to be kind of funds kind of going back through, coming back into the business that the business can use to find a, you know, suitable replacement. Again, it's all about maintaining, you know, continuity to your client, showing them that you were thoughtful and considerate enough and kind of planned ahead that if something were to happen to me, the business just not just, you know, go offline or shut its doors.
Okay. Now, this was your first article for us, but it wasn't your last. This interview is actually your coming out party for our audience because you're joining us, as I mentioned, as a regular contributor to our print magazine, as well as our website. And you're going to have a regular dedicated newsletter discussing financial topics that are important for minority and women business owners. So welcome aboard. And tell us, what can we expect from you going forward?
2024 is all about releasing that scarcity mindset that we first had when we stepped into entrepreneurship and bootstrapped our business. We are now in a space where we are calling in all the help that we need to get to the next level. We've created our own table. Let's bolt that table to the floor and make sure that we can add seats to that table to bring the next generation on board. So my goal is really to give you all of the tools that you need to secure the next level of your success. And that's really through some strategic tax planning and wealth building strategies.
Awesome. Awesome. Great stuff. And for people who want to contact you, say they may want to have a conversation, talk to you about their tax issues or any other financial issues, how can they get in contact with you?
Sure. You can, if you want to have a consultation with me, it's always free to talk. You can go to my website, averywealth.com. It's A-V-E-R-E wealth.com. And you can also follow me on LinkedIn.
All right. Once again, you can contact Allison at Avery Wealth. That is AVERE wealth.com or on LinkedIn. Her name is Allison, A-L-L-E-S-O-N Tate.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, everyone, for joining us for another episode of Diversity Discourse. And I will see you in the pages.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Diversity Discourse, the official podcast of Minority Business Entrepreneur Magazine. We hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to subscribe so that we can join you again. For more tips and notes from the show, check us out at mbemag.com. And to find out which guests and topics we'll be discussing next, sign up for our newsletter at mbemag.com/pulse. That's mbemag.com/pulse. We'll talk to you next time.